There was no gun. There was no huge finishing arch. I think we got a briefing on what to do if we got a snake bite.
Diz Runs Radio, episode 1224, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey, y'all, real quick before we dive into today's episode of the show, if there's something that you're struggling with from a running perspective, I know a guy, I am a guy that is here to help. And one of the offers that I have, and I've talked about this before, but it's been a minute. So just to remind you, we got the consult calls. They're always available. You can jump on my schedule anytime. It's easy peasy. And we talk through 20, 30 minutes, maybe a little bit longer if we need to go a little bit longer. But we talk through whatever it is that you're struggling with. I try to give you some objective insights, maybe some answers, maybe just some things for you to continue to chew on, some things for you to continue to think about, and ultimately come up with the decision that's right for you. But obviously, with some things that are a little bit more complicated, you know, a simple email or a simple DM, that doesn't cut it. If it's a simple question, I mean, we can always do that. We can play that game for free, of course. But sometimes there's just something to be said about jumping on the phone and talking, or the Zoom, or the Skype, or, you know, I mean, maybe sending carrier pigeons back and forth, although that's a little bit closer to, you know, the DM situation, and that it's probably not ideal. But if we need to talk through something, whether it's a training issue, whether it's how to structure things issue, whether it's coming back from an injury issue, anything running related that, you know, that you want to pick my brain on, my brain is open for the picking. Simply by going to dizruns.com/consultation. That's the link. Scroll on down to the bottom, and there's a link that'll connect you to PayPal. You pay your, I think it's $25, and then you get access to my calendar, and it just opens up. You pick a time that works for you. You give me your phone number. You say, hey, can we do a Zoom call? I'll send you a Zoom link, and we'll jump on board. And hopefully in the neighborhood, like I said, 20, 25, 30, 35 minutes, you'll get some clarity. You'll have a good idea of different options to pursue and an idea of which one is the right one for you. So check it out, dizruns.com/consultation. If I can be of service, let me be of service. And now, without any further ado, let's go ahead and dive in to today's episode of the show. Hey, y'all. Today's guest is a lady that is a massive ambassador for the sport of running in general, which clearly means, or at least in my mind, clearly means that we will have no shortage of things to talk about today. Probably, I'll just go on record as saying probably more things that we could talk about than what we'll actually get to today, which is fun. You know, it's always nice to have plenty of things to talk about and hopefully dive deep on a few, but we'll see how it all goes. One topic that will no doubt be up for discussion at some point today is the Guinness Book of World Records that she, or the Guinness World Record that she had back in the day. It's been surpassed since then, which is ridiculous. We'll get into that as we go. But anybody that has set a Guinness World Record is, you know, there's usually a story involved with that as well. So we'll get to that at some point. But first things first, let's get the party started and officially welcome Ms. Susie Goodwin to the show. Thanks for joining us today, Susie. Really appreciate it.
Denny, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Looking forward to it. And y'all, if you enjoyed today's conversation, want to kind of dig into more about what Susie's got going on, follow her along and on her journey and some of the things that she's got going, which again, I'm sure we'll be talking about at some point today. Runwithsusie.com is the website. Instagram, Threads, X, TikTok, all the social medias, same handle in all the places, which we know that always makes it easy around here. And it's almost like mine, except it's her name instead of my name. So it's at Susie Runs on all the things social. So I'm at Diz Runs, y'all know that, but she's at Susie Runs, easy to remember, and that's S-U-Z-Y, because there are a few different ways to spell Susie. Let's not kid ourselves, but at Susie Runs, S-U-Z-Y, and again, that's Run with Susie, S-U-Z-Y, is the website. Dizruns.com/1224. We'll get you back to the show notes for today. As per usual, I have the links there, some photos, the whole nine as per usual. Dizruns.com/1224 to get to the show notes for today. So Susie, the way we always start off each episode of the show, with pretty simple, straightforward question, or at least I think it's a simple question to ask. Sometimes it's a simple one to answer. Sometimes it's a little complicated because there's a lot of good options out there. But one way or the other, it is a great way to start the conversation, usually about 14 follow-up questions that come from this one simple question. But that's just to simply ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
There are a lot of great answers to this question, but my favorite is the marathon. I love that 26.2. Look, I have done 71 at the time of this recording, and not once have I ever not had a gut check. Like, I love this distance because 26.2 miles, I know when I toe the line, I am going to have a gut check sometime in the next few hours, and I am here for that.
Yeah, yeah, that marathon distance is it's a challenge. But when you talk about gut check, I feel like I know what you're maybe talking about, but can you expand on that a little bit more?
Yeah, when I'm talking about a gut check moment, I'm talking about like when you have to make the conscious decision to keep going when every part of you wants to stop. It's that resilience building, just I don't think I can, but I'm going to push through anyway.
Yeah, and that's something that I mean, I guess if it's 71 marathons and counting, you're still feeling that. I guess that probably means it's probably never going to go away. You're probably always going to run into that during the course of a race. But I'm assuming. I feel like I've gotten there. I mean, I've been there a few times. I've run enough marathons that I've felt that as well. Those days when you keep pushing and your body responds, like that's one of those feelings that's just. I mean, it's kind of hard to put into words, I think, but like, you know, I've pushed and not responded and had to stagger home at the end of a marathon and really feel pretty wrecked. But those times when you push and like your body's like, all right, yeah, we can do this, you know, get out of the way, mind, let's rock and roll. That's a pretty special day at the office.
Absolutely. And, you know, for runners, the more times we do that, the more times we have that gut check or we're like, all right, we got to put the hammer down. Mm-hmm. The more times you have to do it, regardless of whether you're successful or not, it makes it easier to muster up the courage the next time. It will serve you when you're able to practice it like that. And that could occur in a training run too, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it certainly can. But I don't know, at least for me, I feel like race day, it's, I don't want to say better, but like for me in a training run, like it's a lot easier to just kind of be like, man, this is just a training run. Like we'll just back off a little bit. Like I had no reason to, you know, like there's no medal for this long run today. But I don't know, maybe that's just me, but yeah, like one way or the other, you get there multiple times, no doubt. I get there on the long runs, just seems like just about every bloody weekend, certainly on race day. And yeah, it's nice to push and know that there's something underneath you to push against.
That is spoken like a mature, level-headed coach. I'm sure there are some listeners out there that are like me and kind of that type A sort, right? And so there's that pressure. That's why we need good coaching and to know when we should go easy or hard.
Yeah, my very much type B minus personality doesn't always serve me in every instance, but I think that's one of them where I'm just like, eh, you know, whatever. It's just Saturday. We'll be fine. But anyway, to each their own. And yeah, it's nice to be able to bounce that off of somebody. Maybe help level out. Sometimes y'all type A people help bring me up a little bit. Maybe my B minus, I bring you down a little bit. And somewhere in the middle is maybe the right place to be.
Yes.
So, Susie, you mentioned, you know, 71 marathons to date and counting. Which says to me at least that you've been running for a minute, you know, like it's not like this is not like some of the folks we've had on the show in the past where, you know, been, and obviously I say only with major quotation marks, but only running for a couple few years, whatever. You've been at it for a while. Where'd you get started in the sport of running? Has it been kind of a lifelong always thing or how'd you get started in the sport?
You know, I ran cross country in high school, and then like a lot of college kids, I drank and partied my way through the first couple of years in undergrad. And I mean, I didn't exercise at all. I cannot tell you what like the gym at my college looks like. Have no idea. I never went there. But during my junior year, a friend on my floor in the dorm was training for a marathon. So having that running background from high school, I was for sure intrigued. So when she would finish her long runs, I mean, she'd walk through the door and I would 21 question this woman and say, you know, how far'd you go? Where'd you go? What'd you eat, you know, during? What did it feel like? How do you feel now? I mean, I was all the questions. So like a good friend would, shout out Amanda, the following year when she decided to do another marathon, she took me under her wing to train with her. I mean, she helped me with the training schedule. She matched my pace. She was kind of like my mentor slash Sherpa for my first marathon. And you know what? We're still great friends now, but it really blossomed with that shared connection with the marathon training experience. And, you know, it's important for me to share this, like that's where I got my start, because it taught me to share my story as a runner, to be an ambassador for the sport. And when people ask questions, because there are people listening, right? Whether you're racing the longer distance or you're not racing at all, you run for fun and mental health, people are going to ask you about it. So answer their questions. And my word, if somebody wants to join you, let them.
Yeah, for sure. It's I feel like maybe this is just my bubble. I don't know. But like, so, all right. So a bit of context, but along those same lines, because I love the idea of expanding people out, like helping new folks or, you know, help folks that maybe aren't as far along on the timeline, don't have as much experience. I started about, I guess not quite a year ago now. We moved to Georgia, from Florida about a year and a half ago, and about 6 months in, I was like, hey, like let's start a neighborhood group run. Like I see people out running in the neighborhood. Maybe we can get some folks together. And you know, we've had a few folks and it's great, but the point where I'm trying to get to is I've had so many folks that are like, oh, I can't keep, like, you know, I'm not good enough, whatever that means. I'm not fast enough. I can't run 3 miles in one shot, whatever. And, I just feel like sometimes, you know, from the outside looking in, people might look at what we are doing, no matter how far we're running, how fast we're running, and be like, oh gosh, I can't do that. So I'm almost intimidated to ask the question. And I don't know exactly the point I'm trying to make other than like the more open you can make yourself to encouraging somebody to ask those questions, like how do I get started? Whatever the question might be, can I run with you? You know, any opportunity to expand that circle and goodness, to your point, Susie, with your friend Amanda, like, you know, you start sharing some miles together over the course, especially some longer runs at some point. That's a pretty good way to make a really good friend, over the course of 10 miles and 14 miles and 18 miles, you know, week after week.
It is. I'll tell you. So this was circa 2003 and the Harry Potter series was releasing. So I remember very vividly, like book 6 released during our training cycle and we were reading it together. And during our long, we wouldn't talk about it during the week. We would save it for the long run. And that's a core memory for me. So again, you know, I want to encourage folks to invite people to run, but then also like offer up, for example, like if you're a faster runner comparatively and you know somebody might be intimidated, you could say, yo, Denny, you want to go for a run? I'll match your pace. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, how about a walk and talk? Wear your running shoes. Maybe we'll do some pickups while we're out there. There's a way to try to kind of level the playing field and let folks know that you're in it to support and not necessarily to show out.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, and I'll just add on top of that, as Mr. Heart Rate Training over here, like, I mean, you can't run slow enough for it to not be effective. So even if it's not your normal easy day pace, but you're running with somebody else's somewhat easy pace or whatever, it's slower than you normally run, you're still getting the benefit, you know, just not for nothing. You're not wasting your time. Obviously this is a personal connection, hopefully, you know, helping to foster a newer runner come up through the ranks and gain some experience and really fall in love with the sport. But there's also like, you're also still getting the benefit of the training as well.
Totally.
Yeah. So first marathon while still in college, that's, you know, I don't want to say that's an early start, cause obviously some folks, I mean, I've heard stories of people doing them in high school, things like that. But you got after it pretty, I would say relatively early in life.
Yes. And, you know, right out of college, I took a job traveling where I didn't know anybody. I'm originally from North Carolina and it was a sales gig. The territory was in the Midwest, spanning Iowa, Wisconsin, Indiana, Illinois, kind of that area. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to do another one. That way I'll have something to do on the weekends when I'm in these random cities I don't know. Like I can at least find the running group and then I'll have some friends and I'll occupy my weekends. But what a great way, one, to explore places that you're unfamiliar with. You're doing it on foot. And then two, to make friends in communities. So that's where number 2, 3, 4, and 5 was in those early years working and just not knowing anybody.
Yeah, and I guess that leads perfectly to the next question or another area that I want to talk about a little bit is your 50 state marathon and ultra marathon journey that you're on, and if the website's up to date, you're getting close. You're not quite there, but there's only a handful of states left. But was that on your radar, I guess, when you were running that 2, 3, 4, 5 marathon, or was that something that kind of came later? You're like, oh, well, shoot, I've already knocked out a handful of states.
Actually, when I was doing my 10th marathon, another runner had mentioned it to me that, hey, there's this club and a lot of people have this goal to run a marathon in each of the 50 states. It was another runner that planted the seed for me. And I had just happened to run races in different states to that point. So at that point, number 10 was my 10th state. And I said, oh, well, I've been doing this thing right. I might as well go for it. And to your point, the website is up to date. I've got 4 more to go: California, Washington, Montana, and Hawaii.
All right. Is there a definitive, this one is going to be number 50, or is it kind of as it comes?
Now, here's where I'm a little more like you, Denny, the B plus instead of a type A. I'm not one of those that like has a spreadsheet and it's calendared out for the next few years. My husband has retired from service, but he was in the Army for 20 years. And so I would just pick up states where he was stationed. Oh, we're going to be in Missouri for 2 years. I might as well get the states in and around, you know, I might as well get Missouri and then those states around. So I've just been flying by the seat of my pants.
Fair enough. I am also working on a 50 state marathon type of situation. But I have like 40 more states to go. I think it might actually literally be 40 or 39, something like that. But here's where I'm a little bit more type A apparently. not that I have 39 plans worked out, but like, I really want to make Hawaii 50. Now, if the stars align and we got to Hawaii for some reason and it happened to be marathon weekend for one of the races there or whatever, I mean, might not pass that up. But unless you know, it's divine intervention to put me on the Big Island at the same time that the Honolulu Marathon is going on. We're going to try to make that 50 and make it, you know, a pretty big to do at that point.
That will be a nice capstone.
Yeah. I mean, I think so. And, you know, again, it's kind of one of those, like, how many opportunities are you going to get there? So you got to take it when you get it. But otherwise I've very much been just kind of like, you know, when we're here, we're here. Like I said, I've been living in Georgia now for a year and a half, and Georgia's still on my list of states I haven't run, which I lived in Florida for 15 years, and I've run every other state in the Southeast, it seems like, except Georgia. So, you know, one of these days I'll figure out how to run, you know, the marathon that's an hour away now, but whatever, we'll figure that out. But along the way, and I hate this question because it's so open-ended and it's so vague, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What are some of the more memorable races that you've run along the 50 states or, you know, even other ones that, you know, of the 71? But obviously you traveled enough. It's not like you're one of those runners. And we know a few of them and we love them, but run the same race or same 2 or 3 races every year. And that's just, they just run the same race every year. You've got some variety. Any races really stand out as, like, you know, if you want to pitch somebody to, hey, run this race, if you ever have the opportunity, what are a couple of those races for you?
My favorite race ever is the Run with the Horses Marathon. It's in Green River, Wyoming. And as the name would suggest, you, depending on if those herds of horses are out, you quite literally run with the horses. So you go up into a canyon. Vehicles cannot go in this area. And the year that I did it, I mean, I'm talking maybe a quarter mile away, you're just seeing like wild horses running. It was amazing. Was it my fastest time? No. Was it the most amazing experience ever? Yes, absolutely. Y'all, the race had at the time 50, maybe 60 people. There was no gun. There was no huge finishing arch. I think we got a briefing on what to do if we got a snake bite at the beginning. But I mean, just the pure beauty of that. Like, just totally untouched. We're out here with these wild horses. It was absolutely amazing. I'll also mention that my journey, it's definitely been, I mean, my very first marathon actually was in Tybee Island, Georgia. It took me well over 5 hours to complete, 5 hours and 20 minutes. They were picking up cones behind us. Now, here's the thing. I didn't realize that meant we were the last two people on the course, because remember, my friend was matching my pace. I didn't even realize that meant that. And this was before social media. I often wonder if that experience happened now, right? If I were the last, if they were picking up cones behind me now, would I just DNF? Would I be ashamed or embarrassed? I don't know. But at the time, I will tell you, I was so proud of being able to finish 26.2 miles on foot. I didn't care they were picking up cones behind me. It was amazing. Now, I have progressively just gotten a little bit faster and faster, aided greatly by, I know that you preach often, you know, to train slow and then race fast. So aided by that, I'm also a huge fan of weightlifting. I'm a CrossFit enthusiast. I don't do it well, but I do it. And it definitely injury proofs me for my running. My most recent PR is 3:20 and some change, but that's 2 hours off in my 21 years of running. It's been slowly but surely. I've been a member of every pace group out there, but I'm proud of that progress as well.
Well, yeah, I think that's I hope that's encouraging. Lord knows it's encouraging to me I think my first marathon was about 5:40, something like that. And now I'm my most recent PR, which was, goodness, it was before times, is like 2019 or something like that. It's been a while since I've raced a hard marathon, which is why it's taken me forever and a day to get to my 50 state type of situation. But, you know, just cracked 4 hours finally for the first time. But I bring all that up to say that I think that sometimes we runners, and myself even sometimes, you know, if I'm going to be honest, you know, you hear somebody that runs, you know, whatever it is, 3:30, 3:20, 3:15, 3:45, whatever, any time that to you is like, wow, that's really fast. And you think that they probably have always been fast. They probably always have run at that same level of pace, you know, maybe hopefully seen some progress, but like, you know, to hear you say that, hey, you know, you've taken 2 hours off of your marathon time in 20 plus years, I don't know. To me, that's super encouraging to just remember that, like, especially with any type of endurance sport, you know, triathlon, cycling, swimming, running, of course, as well. If you can stay healthy and be consistent and just keep chipping away, training, hopefully intelligently, I guess at some point we're all going to get slower, but, you know, some Father Time is still undefeated, but you can make a lot of progress and get a lot faster, run a lot farther, run a lot stronger. If you just kind of keep sticking with it, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I agree. I think consistency is the secret sauce.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. You're preaching to the choir there. You mentioned strength training in there and the CrossFit. And yes, I'm a big believer in that and try to practice what I preach there and certainly try to preach it a lot as well. Was that something that was also always part of your routine? You back to the college days where you, I know you said you weren't in the gym very often, but maybe post-college, first marathon, something like that, you start getting into the gym? Or where did you start to tie in the relationship between strength training and like you said, kind of injury resistance, performance benefits as well in terms of running? Like where did those two roads converge?
Well, we lived in Fairbanks, Alaska. My husband was stationed to Fort Wainwright. And at that point, I had been running marathons for about 8 years. It was negative 40, negative 50 during the months that I would be training for my spring race. My husband was going to the local CrossFit affiliate, and he started talking to me about volume-wise, minimum effective dose. Mm-hmm. Just kind of wondering out loud, I wonder if you could trade in some of these miles that you're doing on the treadmill because it's so cold outside and maybe do CrossFit a couple times a week and just see how it goes. Worst case scenario, you have a slower marathon time. Best case scenario, you find a way to shave some of the time inputs and you add that variety in. Well, that's exactly what happened. I fell in love with, you know, running. Obviously, we can run in groups. Oftentimes for runners, that happens. Those group runs happen for long runs. But usually it's a solo. It's kind of a lonely sport. So I really loved, you know, and my current routine is 3 times a week. I love being with other people, that social aspect. But then also from a fitness and performance aspect, doing those deadlifts, doing those squats, doing those presses, some of these foundational lifts, lifting heavy. I'm a woman in my 40s. I know it's great for my bones, but I also referred to it as injury proofing earlier. I really do believe it allows me to, be consistent because I don't get injured as often. I'm strong. I love seeing hills on a course. Because I know that's where I'm going to pass people because I've been squatting my bum off for the past few months. And I know that more than likely the runners around me haven't. So it kind of gets me hype. That's my ode to all things weightlifting or metabolic conditioning. I just love it.
when your husband suggested or floated the idea of minimum dose of strength training out there, was there hesitation in terms of, I mean, you know, it's easy to say, and I mean, Lord knows I'd probably say the same type of thing to my wife, where it's like, you know, what's the worst that happens? You run your next marathon a few minutes slower, like whatever. But, you know, you're talking to runners and like, yeah, what's the worst thing that happens? I go through this training cycle and I push myself on race day and like, I don't run as well. Like, yeah, that's, I mean, there's worse things obviously, but like, that's a pretty sucky thing as well. All that to say, was there hesitation or were you like, yeah, you know what, let me get off this treadmill a little bit, you know, at least a little bit and get in the gym and see what happens?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I shared this with him at the time, but I was going to pull the plug on it if my running times were not consistent. Like at that point, I had 8 years under my fuel belt, so to speak. And I knew, you know, even though I was doing long runs, for me, what worked then and continues to work well is every other week. I know what my long runs should be, like my target pace should be. If I saw a decline in that performance, I was going to pull the plug on CrossFit. Now, the part I didn't share about this story is I ended up qualifying for Boston after a really long not make it. I mean, I attempted so many times in a row and kind of just threw my hands up in the air when we moved to Alaska and said, ah, whatever. That was the race I ended up qualifying by a long shot.
Okay. Well, there we go. Everybody hit the weights. I think the finishing point on that, especially those of us, myself included, that are still trying to get to Boston. And my joke, and although it's really not joke, it's like 100% serious. I got to get a little bit faster and you know, 20 years older. And at that point or somewhere about that point, the lines will cross. And as long as the Boston qualifying times don't keep going down too dramatically, although Lord knows they probably will. But point being, Boston's a big goal for mine, for myself. I know it's a goal for folks that are listening, and for you then, if I'm hearing you correctly, kind of worked on it for a while, tried on it for a while. It was out there for a while. You finally, you know, you blow past your BQ, you go run Boston. What's the Boston Marathon? What was your first Boston Marathon experience? If there's been more than one.
There has. At the time of this recording, I'm coming up on my seventh.
Okay.
So it has been a race. That's the only race I've revisited. You asked earlier, like, favorite race, do you do the same one all the time? That's the only one I've really revisited because, Denny, my Boston, it's everything they say it's going to be. They call it the People's Olympics, and that's exactly how folks, like, from Hopkinton, where, I mean, you know, high-fiving and slapping kids' hands and signs, and folks are going wild. It is the People's Olympics. Party the whole way into Boston. It's just, it's an amazing experience. I will say, that's one that you want to experience the race, right? Like some races we run to experience the race. Some races we are running for time. Right. Yes, we are focused on those splits. We are grinding for that fast time. My recommendation is experience Boston.
I haven't been there to spectate. I haven't been there to run. I haven't really, you know, clearly, like I said, you know, 357 or 358, whatever my PR is at this point. Like I haven't sniffed Boston qualifying yet, but I have put it out there. That's 100% my, like, whenever I qualify to run Boston, it's going to take me 6.5 hours because I'm going to be just enjoying the process, stopping for a beer, getting a brat with somebody, like whatever. I'm going to take my sweet old time. I put a smile on my face for you to say that's the way to do it is to experience it as well. Have you in doing it six times to this point and, you know, getting ready to go run it again for the seventh time, have you tried to race it and not had a good experience there, or have you just always treated it as just an experience?
I tried to race it 1 year, and it turned out okay. One of the things so there's a 100-mile race that I do here in North Carolina. It's on the Outer Banks, and it occurs at the end of March. Mm. Anybody listening that's familiar with Boston knows that Boston is mid-April. Mm. So for the last couple of years, my goal has been get to Boston healthy, right after that 100-mile, get to Boston healthy and enjoy the race. And that's worked out nicely for me. So my tough, I'm going to grind it out, I'm going to go for it, is the 100-mile race. And then Boston is, I guess, my victory lap.
Yeah. Well, nothing. I mean, that feels like, again, from what everybody I've ever talked to has said, and certainly what you said, sounds like, you know, maybe New York might be up there as a rival in terms of Boston, but like not a whole lot of better victory laps than a race like that.
Definitely.
So you mentioned 100 miles, which is another topic on the agenda to maybe get to some of this ultra running nonsense, since we've talked about a lot of marathons. Where did you, or when did you finally decide to go or get the, maybe it was a peer pressure thing. Lord knows there's enough peer pressure in this sport that's usually positive, where it's like, hey, you know, if you can run 26.2 miles, you can probably do 50K. And then that is a slippery slope to apparently at least 100 miles. But where did the ultra running side of things come into play?
You know, a trail marathon made me realize, oh, I really like the trails. Like a lot of road runners, right? Like when we want some variety, getting on the trail will do exactly that, because it requires, you know, you can't dissociate on a trail. You've got to think, right? There are rocks and roots. The crowd is different. There are no spectators for trail races. The other runners, they might not even be wearing watches, dude. They're just out there to enjoy nature. And so that really appealed to me. And as you can imagine, as I was looking for races, there are more 50Ks than trail marathons. So I've done a handful of 50Ks, handful of 50 milers. And then the 100 miler goal, I had always said I wanted to do it. I remember saying it back in that CrossFit gym in Alaska, I'm going to do a 100 miler someday. And then I finally trained up for it in 2020. And the race was in March 2020. And everybody listening knows exactly what happened to that race. It was pandemic canceled. So I ended up doing that one virtually. And if it sounds like a drag, it was in my neighborhood. It was awful. I did it. It was awful. So last year I said, okay, I got to do the actual course that I had intended to do in 2020. Did it last year and had so much fun. I'm going back for more this year.
Gotcha. We talked earlier about the gut checks of a marathon. How do the gut checks of a 100 miler compare to the gut checks of a marathon?
So mentally, for a 100 miler, I break it down into 10s. Mm-hmm. So like, this is the only point that I will say, yeah, 100 miles all at once. When I get there from the starting line to the end, in my mind, I'm going 10 miles at a time, 10 to 20, 20 to 30, 30 to 40, and so on. And once I get outside of that 10 miles I'm in, I focus on the next 10 miles. The course that I did last year was, it's point to point in the Outer Banks, and we had a 30 mile an hour headwind the entire time. So it was very much, Denny, like a pick them up, put them down kind of thing. And what I mean by pick them up, put them down is sometimes you can't take it 10 minutes at a time, a mile at a time, whatever these, you know, like inspirational Instagram squares say. Right. Sometimes you quite literally are taking one step at a time. And that was very much my experience. I would say from 80 to 100, it was a pick them up, put them down kind of thing. But I did it. And we talked about resilience earlier. And it's like, okay, if you can do it once, now as I think about the experience I'm about to have, I will know, okay, I know what it feels like to go step by step, to be aching in every part of my body, for my mind, my bad self to be telling me to quit. I've been there. I've done that. And I got through it. So that gives me some confidence going into the next time.
Gotcha. For sure. I mean, as it should. This question sounds like a very roadrunner specific type of question, because it's about time. And I don't mean it that way, but it kind of sets up the follow-up question, depending on the answer, I guess, where I'm going with this. But how long was that first official, you know, the first race, the last race of doing the 100 miles?
Yeah, it was just shy of 25 hours. And as anyone that's familiar with ultra running is listening, they're like, oh no, because sub 24 is kind of what a lot of ultra runners go for, or have a goal, so to speak. So I think with the 100, though, I don't necessarily set time goals. So even this year, sub 24 is not a stretch goal for me, because so many things can happen throughout the course of 100 miles. I believe it's too much pressure to put on yourself to also attach a number to it. And the kind of person that's going to be attracted to a 100 miler wants that experience. So of course I'm going to empty my tank. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it my all. And I know this sounds crazy as a runner, but like, I don't have a time goal. I want to finish.
Well, and I feel like
just trail running in general, but especially you start getting into even, you know, even just a 50K type of ultra distance type of trail race. Like, you can have all the time goals you want. You can have run this trail 1,000 times and know the trail like the back of your hands. But, like, if it rains 3 days before the trail race starts, like, it could be a completely different course, you know. And all of a sudden, all these goals and best laid plans, or if it's, you know, whatever, any type of weather conditions, any type of, you know, if there was a bunch of mountain bikers out on the trail before, now the trail's torn up a little bit because the bikers tore it up, which, you know, I mean, fair play to them. And Lord knows I run on a lot of mountain bike trails, and sometimes that's the case. But it's just the point being that it's not like a road race where you're like, you can pretty much trust that, like, the road is going to be the road. Like, the trail is going to be the trail, but it doesn't always mean that it's going to be what you expect it to be, which, again, if you've run trails before, you know that makes it a big difference in terms of time goals. And sometimes you have to walk and hike, not because you're tired, but because the trail dictates, with all the rocks and roots and things like that. If you run, there's a decent chance you're going to catch a toe somewhere and go down, and maybe that ends your race. So it's the trail is just a different beast altogether.
Absolutely. More, I mean, it's appropriate for road racing, but I think especially on trails, you've got to control what you can control. Now, interestingly, the 100 miler that I'm talking about, it's the Blackbeard's Revenge 100. It's on pavement.
Okay.
So, yes, it does beat your body up as much as you could imagine. But, you know, as I'm looking at the weather, 30 mile an hour headwinds, I'm getting emails from the RD that says, hey, there are a couple of bridges that you might not be able to run over because the bridge will be closed down. It's too windy for anybody to pass. I can't control that. Right. What I can control, though, okay, how am I breaking this down in my head? What do I have in my drop bag? Who do I have out there for me? I think it's really important, whether you're on the road or the trail, to control the controllables, and the weather is not a controllable.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. The reason I asked the time question was because I was wondering if it was, you know, had gone over 24 hours. Because in my limited 100 mile experience, which is as a crew member, that sunrise in the morning, as you're getting towards the finish line, is, I don't know. Again, my limited, my N equals one of being a crew pace person for 100 mile race is that night, those nighttime hours can get pretty rough, like pretty dark, pun somewhat intended, literally and metaphorically. But when that sun comes up and you're at whatever, you're at mile 87 or 92 or wherever you are, the sun comes up again, my one N equals experience, both as the pacer and seeing the runner I was with, what a game changer when the sun came up. And I'm curious if it was similar for you on, you know, getting towards the end of the finish line, 24 hours, 23 hours, 25 hours, the sun comes up. Like, was that a game changer for you?
I want everyone to picture this. I've been running in darkness. I'm in the pain cave. I'm dying. I'm going a step at a time. The sunrise moment for me, I was actually in Cape Hatteras Park. So if anybody's familiar, any picture that you've seen of North Carolina with the white lighthouse with the black stripes, that's Cape Hatteras. And I saw the sunrise, Cape Hatteras right there. Backdrop is the sunrise. And it does so much mentally to uplift you. It's amazing. And it was an incredible experience. Now, of course, I still had a while to go, right. But it really gave me that mental lift that I needed, a power up, if you will.
Yeah, that was how it was, again, and without getting all the details, it was just like, it felt like we were going to be falling behind, you know, cutoffs, and we weren't going to make it. And it was like, just get through the dark, you know, once the sun comes up, it's a game changer. And I'd never been around that type of, you know, 100 mile distance before. And that's what the volunteers were saying, is like, if she can just make it till the sun comes up, and then you all start running together, or whatever, you know, as the process was playing out. And sure enough, man, the sun comes up and everybody got a boost and was necessary. So glad that you experienced it. And yeah, I suppose if you're running right along the coast of North Carolina, like, you got no trees to get in the way of the sun coming up. So as soon as that sun cracks the ocean somewhere far off on the horizon, you're getting the benefit right away.
Absolutely.
For sure. So before we get to the end, which is coming quicker than anticipated, which always seems to be the case, got to talk about the Guinness World Record that you set, because it's an impressive one. And you know, anybody who knows anything, I feel like, about Guinness records, especially, you know, in this type of day and age, or in the last 10, 15 years, like there are some out there that you can kind of, you know, it's like, oh, well, nobody's done this before, whatever this might be. And so you can kind of, you know, almost make your own Guinness World Record. Not saying that that's what you did, but like, you know, some of them are really peculiar and some of them are like, I mean, they're all impressive, I mean, world records. But 2016, you set a Guinness World Record. What was the record that you set?
I did. I set the fastest half marathon while pushing a triple pram female.
Whew. So a triple stroller with three kids in it. They were your three kids. What was that whole? I mean, I don't know. Was it intentional going into it, or you know, kind of set the stage in the lead up and to the race itself?
Yeah, absolutely. So the three kids in the stroller. I have triplets. I'm a triplet mom. And they actually spent the first 2 months of their lives in the NICU. So we knew we wanted to do something big for their first anniversary of their NICU homecoming. For any parents out there, like, a NICU homecoming is as big as a birthday.
Yeah,
it's a really, really big deal. So we decided we were going to do some fundraising for our NICU. And I had, without expecting to, I had won a 5K with the triple stroller that summer of 2016. And it was very unexpected. It was like 23 minutes. So not like a super fast time, but like for that small 5K, it was enough to win the race.
I mean, and not for nothing, not to cut you off, Susie, but like, you know, 23 minutes isn't just any old time for just running by yourself, like a little pushing a stroller. Goodness gracious.
Thank you. It is 3.5 feet wide. And probably at the time it was probably about 100 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my friends on Instagram, who coincidentally was a Guinness World Record himself, wondered out loud, hey, has anybody ever done this before? Turns out they have, and they've done it in under 20 minutes, which then I laughed and said, there's no way I'm pushing 100 pounds in sub 20. But at the time, the half marathon had not been done yet.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of red tape to actually do the application process with Guinness. But I did, which involved sending in video and picture of the stroller, side-by-side seating. They also wanted to see that I hadn't, like, doctored it up in any way. You do have to get permission and course credentials from the race director. So there was a lot that went into it, and they assigned me a time of 2 hours and 15 minutes to set the record. And then another thing that they did is they ask you to get your own PR. So they ask for three pieces of just publicity for the record that you're going to do. And that ended up, one of my three pieces was a local ABC affiliate came out the day of the race and just interviewed before and after. And they actually ended up passing it on to Good Morning America.
Wow.
It for a minute went viral. And so I got to be, Runner's World magazine did a piece. People magazine did a piece. I never thought I would make it into Cosmopolitan magazine, but I was there. So it actually ended up being our quote 5 minutes of fame. And I say our because it was a collective effort with the triplets, but it also brought a lot of, we were able to raise just over $6,000.
Wow.
For the NICU that our kids spent the first 2 months of their lives in, and just brought, you know, honor to the work that God did through the doctors and the nurses and the therapists at the NICU.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. And I did a little check-in beforehand. I was like, you know, it's one of those things where, like, I mean, I don't know, how long do some of these records stand? And I looked it up to see if it was still in place. And do you know what the current female pushing a three-seater
marathon
record is? I don't have it written down, but it, like, 1 hour 28, 1 hour 29, something like that. Just ridiculous.
That is so amazing. So this is cool. So the woman that broke it right after me, she was so remember, we did this for the year NICU homecoming. So our kids were one when I did this. There was a woman by the name of Anne Marie Cody, who did go on to break my record, but she was recovering, having delivered her triplets in California across the coast. She befriended me online. I helped her with her application. And she went on to secure that one, as well as at the time, the 10K and marathon.
Goodness gracious.
I know. So what's really cool is, I mean, like, I'm an age grouper at best. All right. Like, I'm not some super athlete. This was a very niche record. But what's neat is now you're telling me, Denny, like, yeah, you're in the same category as somebody that can push 100 pounds in an hour and a half. Like, right. That's a phenomenal athlete. And I feel honored to even have shared the same record, but then also to bring some attention to stroller running for the running community.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, you know, we have just one little one who's, I guess, getting bigger by the day. She'll be 10 this summer. But I remember, you know, pushing the stroller with her and I mean, we lived in Florida when she was stroller age, and Florida's pretty notoriously flat. Point being, it's not easy, whether it's flat, whether it's hills, whether it's even, you know, you get a little downhill. Sometimes that's almost harder with the stroller because you got to keep the stroller under control along with yourself.
That was the hardest part of my race. So I did it at the time our hometown was Fayetteville, North Carolina. Okay. And the course had about 2,000 feet of ascent. It was an out and back. So
what goes up must come down.
Yes. And the kids were just over one. So collectively it was about 120 pounds, which is my body weight. Yeah. Going down is terrifying because you're breaking, right? Like everything that your brain knows not to do as a runner, don't break with your heels. Mm-hmm. You have to do that to make sure your kids don't go flying into the river.
Oh, goodness gracious. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. And here's maybe the most obvious question. I'm sure you've got this a thousand times, but I'm sure there's people screaming at going, Diz, ask the question. Like it's right there. How do you train for a half marathon with three kids that are less than one at the time, obviously, if they're about one when you run the race. And oh, by the way, your oldest is just a couple years older than that. So it's not like, you know, like you have four kids under whatever, 5-6 years old at the time. How do you find time to train for a half marathon in that scenario?
You know, in terms of the runs themselves, the triplets weren't quite one when I was training for it. So I had to get them used to the stroller. Mm. So I would have to plan around their nap and food schedule. Now, I had taken a career break at the time. Yeah. I need people to hear this. Right. This is not something I did alongside working a full-time job 40 hours a week. I had four kids under age 3. And so, yeah, I was a stay-at-home mom at the time. But I actually minimally ran with the kids just enough to get them used to being in the stroller, 3 miles, 4 miles. I actually put sandbags in the stroller to get used to running with the weight. Blessedly, my neighborhood was pretty hilly, like the course would be, so train for the terrain. And I did the majority of my running with sandbags. What a weirdo I must have looked like. But I mean, my neighbors, we were new to that neighborhood at the time too. And some of my friends confessed to me later, yeah, we thought you were some kind of try hard, like, like what, running isn't good enough for you? You got to fill a stroller with sandbags. Obviously they knew what I was doing eventually.
Mm-hmm. Goodness. Well, and you got it done. And I guess maybe the closing angle now is just want to talk a little bit, you know, as far as the example that you set for your kids, you know, Guinness record aside, which is pretty awesome, but just the fitness side of things, the strength training, the CrossFit, the obviously running is still a big part of your life. Is it still a family affair, or how do you tie the family tie in with the workout and the fitness side of your life as well?
I'm so glad this is how you're wrapping it up because it's very much. We've got our kids at the time of this recording are 10, 8, and 8.
Eight, right? Yeah.
Yes. One of them has really taken to running and is actually training for. He's done a handful of 5Ks and he's training for his first 10K. He really enjoys getting out there. He likes the training runs. We have a treadmill at home, so that's helpful in terms of just, you know, monitoring it. But all of them are quite active. We have a home gym as well, and so our kids have seen modeled for them. My husband and I prioritizing our fitness and adopting hobbies that are part of a healthy lifestyle. And they are the kind of kids that, like, we have to send them back up to bed at 5 a.m. because they want to come down to the gym and work out with mom and dad. It's one of those, we put that in the category of really great problems to have. And my hope is that, I'm biased to running, right? But my hope is that all of them can find a lifetime sport that they love. As I think about my own running journey, high school cross country is its own thing. Finding marathoning, slowly improving, having those run clubs every time my military husband would move every 2 years, I was able to make friends. Running with the stroller and now running with my 8-year-old, it's just, I love how running meets you where you are in your season of life.
Yeah, no, I love it as well. We, my daughter is 9, ran her first 5K with the turkey trot. Our little neighborhood has its own little turkey trot on Thanksgiving, and she ran it with us this year. And it was like, you know, I don't know. I mean, bragging on my kids' time, but like
Do it.
It's just, and I'm sure it sounds like it's similar with you. Like, I'm not trying to force my kid to run. Like running's my thing, and I enjoy it. My wife runs as well, so like we definitely enjoy it. But like, you know, if you want to swim, if you want to do something, like whatever. But to get out and just run with her for, you know, whatever it took us, 42 minutes or something like that to do the 5K, just totally her pace. She didn't walk at all, which I definitely thought she was going to walk a few times. But I mean, she walked at there was one water stop about halfway. She's like, I stopped to get a drink of water. I was like, that doesn't count, babe. Like, you're okay. You ran the whole thing. Just such a cool feeling to share that with your kids. And you know, in my little dad heart, it's like, you know, hopefully somewhere down the line, maybe there's a half marathon, maybe there's a marathon we can run together. If not, great. But like, at least we got one race together, and just such a cool gift, cool experience. And hopefully you'll have many more of those with your son as well.
I can't wait to follow along and the Diz Runs episode 2240, and she's done her first whatever.
Oh, that would be fantastic. That'd be fantastic. So one more question for you, Susie, to wrap things up. I close off typically with a philosophical question. Or at least I call it a philosophical question. It's really not that deep in philosophy, but it's kind of like the introductory question. It's very open-ended. You take it wherever you want to go. But I'd just be curious to know it, you know, at this point in your life, you know, 71 marathons and counting, you know, a couple hundred milers and counting, Lord knows how many miles and counting. Why do you still do it? Why is running still such an important part of your life? Why are you such a fan of spreading the word, being an ambassador for the sport, getting more folks to maybe, you know, lace up and get their first couple miles in? Why is running still so important to you?
I alluded to it earlier when it meets you in every season of life. I love how running has grown with me, and it can kind of morph into what I need it to be: stress relief, a social plug-in. It's really, we've moved a lot with that military background, and it's helped me, find people that have that similar passion. We live on the coast of North Carolina now, and oftentimes I'll see folks in their 90s running on the beach, right? And they're not going fast. They're out there every day, though. And that's what I want to be. I hope that it can take me into that next season as well.
Well, I certainly hope that for you and for everybody listening. I mean, I don't think there's too many of us that are listening. Like, yeah, I just want to run for another 2 years and then shut it down. Like, we all want to keep running forever. So Godspeed to you, Susie. Please stay healthy and keep on keeping on, and looking forward to staying in touch as well. And y'all, runwithsuzy.com is the website. Once again, that's Suzy, S-U-Z-Y, on all the social medias at Suzy Runs, and dizruns.com/1224. If you got looking for links or a quick write-up of the episode, any of that kind of good stuff, that'll get you there, dizruns.com/1224. So, Suzy, thank you for the time. Time flies when you're having fun. It's kind of keeping an eye on the clock, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, shoot, we got to wrap this thing up. And like I said at the beginning, more things that we could have talked about than what we did. But thank you for the time today. I certainly appreciate it. And certainly wish you nothing but the best going forward.
Thank you for having me.
All right, y'all. Thanks so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. Hope you enjoyed the conversation today between Susie and myself. And as per usual, I'd be curious to know what stood out to you from today's episode. What was that thing that's still rattling around in your head? Say it with me now. Y'all know you love this. What was your takeaway du jour? Du jour. For me, there were, you know, unsurprisingly, there were a couple of things that made it on the sticky note. There were a handful of things that didn't quite make the cut. But the one that I'm going to go with is the idea of just how much progress you can make, right? You know, Susie talked about knocking some 2 hours off of her marathon PR time, you know, over the course of 20 plus years. And I just think that, you know, realistically, like, we all have a limit, right? There's a genetic limit that you know, in correlation with how we train and experience and yada, yada, yada. There comes a point where we are not going to get faster, right? And who knows where that point is for you? Who knows where that point is for me? But there is that point out there. I think, and this is me just thinking, this is me spitballing a little bit, no data, no hard science to support this hypothesis, but I would wager that the percentage of runners, especially the percentage of non-elite runners, that ever really get close to that point for themselves is probably small. There's probably a few of us that do. I don't know that I'll ever get, you know, ever get to that point. But the reason that, you know, and I'm not saying that to Debbie Downer or anybody here, but the reason that that's such a big was such a big thing for me in terms of, you know, if Susie can knock 2 hours off of her marathon time in 20-ish years, how much time could I knock off? You know, is it 2 hours? Is it 2.5 hours? Is it 1 hour and 47 minutes? Like, yeah, I don't know. But, you know, it's just a good reminder that, you know, where we started is not always an indication of, you know, this is about what we're capable of. And especially in a sport like running or in an activity like running where, you know, if you can be consistent and you can avoid injuries and you can kind of keep building strategically, you know, year after year, not month after month or week after week, but year after year after year after year, training cycle after training cycle, race after race. And not that it's, you know, not that it's always going to be perfectly smooth and steady and up and to the right. There's going to be some dips and some valleys, and there's going to be some, you know, some cutbacks and some times off and things like that. But when you look at it from a year after year, you know, 2 year chunk, 5 year chunk, 10 year chunk, it just kind of generally trends in the positive direction. I don't know. It just gives me hope for my whole Boston qualifying situation. It just gives me hope as somebody who is competitive with myself that, you know, here I am at 42 years old now. And obviously I'm older than I've ever been, and I'll be older tomorrow than I am today, but that doesn't mean that I'm at my peak yet in terms of running prowess and running race times and things like that. Eventually I'll get there, but you know, I think that I'm a long way from my absolute pinnacle, my absolute peak, and I don't know if I'll ever get there. But that's okay, because it means I can make progress, is I guess what I'm trying to say. So, you know, if you've been at it for a while and you feel like you're not making as much progress as you'd like from one race to the next, I mean, that's very likely, you know, that I'm not trying to dismiss that. I'm certainly not trying to dismiss that for myself. There's been times that I haven't made the progress from one training cycle to the next, or one math test to the next, or whatever that I would expect and that I would kind of want to see. But the more I zoom out, you know, the more I look at it over, I guess I haven't looked at it from 20 years yet. I haven't quite been in the sport for 20 years yet, but goodness gracious, we're getting close to 15 here, Diz. So, you know, it's closer to 20 than not. But the difference in me from, you know, my first marathon 15 years ago, almost, to where I am now, poof, night and day. And I think there's still more. So that's my takeaway, that there's still more, still room to grow, still room for me to get faster, still plenty of room for me to go to reach my physiological peak, if I ever get to my physiological peak, which I don't know that I will. Just being honest. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to keep trying to move forward, because I am. Because I got to keep getting older, and also got to keep getting a little bit faster, get that Boston qualifying time. Anyway, that was my takeaway from today's conversation. What about you? What stood out to you from today's episode? If you're willing to share it, I would love to hear it. At Diz Runs on all the social medias, DizRuns@gmail.com. If you want to send me an email, and of course, if you want to head back to the show notes for today, DizRuns.com/1224 is the link. DizRuns.com/1224. We'll get you there. We'll have some photos, of course, and we'll get the links. And of course, there's that comment section down there at the bottom. Feel free to type away to your little heart's content about what stood out to you from this episode and how it may make a difference for you going forward. Love to hear it when y'all are willing to share those types of things. So that's it for today. One last call for the consultation. Yeah, you know, maybe not my best transition, but we'll go with it. If you want to jump on the phone or jump on the Zoom or jump on the Skype or jump on the Google Meet or whatever other fandangled technology, Facebook has video calls, I think. We can jump in. We can do it on Facebook. Whatever works for you works for me. DizRuns.com/consultation. Book a spot on my calendar. 20, 30 minutes, something like that. I don't keep the stopwatch, but, you know, if we go 35, 40, we'll probably start to wrap it up. But hopefully 20, 30 minutes, you can get some good clarity on what, you know, where we are, what are some options going forward, and hopefully have a pretty good idea of next steps and things to look out for. That's what we try to deliver in those consult calls. So jump on the calendar whenever you're ready. DizRuns.com/consultation. And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap this one up, y'all. Thanks for the time. Thanks for the attention. Thanks for taking Susie and I with you today. Until next time, y'all, be well. Take good care. Thanks again for listening. And we'll talk soon, all right? Later, y'all.